a good day.
Now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. I almost said Monday. It feels kind of like Monday, doesn't it? It's back to normal day after two big holidays in a row, Christmas and New Year's. And now most folks are back to their regular schedule here. We settle in for the long haul until we get our next big holiday break, which is going to be a while. Howie Pentany is with us today on the It's Your Turn program from Pentany Capital Management. And we're going to be talking about what was a pretty good year for investors. Howie, Frank Sinatra had a song. Remember that? It was a very good year. That was back in the, I don't know, 70s or somewhere like that.
No, that's way before my time.
Yeah, well, it was before mine, too. But I used to hear my mom and dad talking about it. But we could apply that, I think, for the major markets. Investors, 401, people with 401k plans, they did pretty well in 2019, did they not?
Well, they could have. I mean, you know, you never – I'm always amazed when I talk to investors. And I see this kind of stuff all the time. You know, here's my 401k, you know. And generally, you know, probably half the – ones I look at are, you know, they did okay. And the other half, people just have no idea and they don't seek any help. So if they just had an index fund or something like that, they did great this year. You know, they're probably bouncing off a 28 or 29%, if that's all they owned. Otherwise, you know, it's hard to tell. The returns were all over the place. I mean,
I never want to lose anybody when we're talking about. We have some people listening who have, you know, been investors for many, many years. Some not. Index fund. When you mention that, what's that mean?
An index fund is merely an investment that is trying, because of the way that they invest the money, to track various indexes. So, for instance, not including dividends, the Standard & Poor's 500 index was up about 29% this year. So theoretically, if you owned an S&P index, you were up about 29% this year. That's not a bad number.
Not a bad number at all, yeah.
I've been around for a long time, so I have a lot of funny people I do business with, and one of them says, okay, what I want is, I like that 29, but I want to be up 29, but when it goes down, I only want to be down 2. See, and I said, no, it doesn't work that way, see. And that generally, Dave, is the way, you know, that people need to think about this. I mean, if you think about it, like I try to be, and this is a weird thing for me to say, but I try to be. I just try not to lose a lot of money, and we'll have to do our little disclaimer here. But we try not to lose a lot of money. Everybody tries not to lose a lot of money, maybe. So you can't own those indexes as your entire investment, because if it's up 30% one year, it's down 30%. You lose the 30.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've also talked about this, as you know. For 120 years, if you've been in the stock market for 120 years and you didn't sell, keyword sell, if you didn't sell, it was impossible to lose any money.
You've been in pretty good shape.
In pretty good shape over there if you didn't sell. But I think that most people just can't do that, you know, which is a good thing for people like me. I think that's why people like me exist, you know. We hold hands in many instances. And you have to stay invested, and I'm talking from a historical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about this year because I don't know what's going to happen next year or whatever it is. Nobody does. Nobody knows what's going to happen. So the line has basically been up for 120 years or so. But it's been up and down. You know, it didn't go straight up. You know, it was up and down. But we don't know what it is. I'm looking for somebody who can tell me what it is, what it's going to do for the next 10 years. I'd like to know that.
I'd like, if you find him, I want him to buy my lottery tickets,
Exactly.
Good time for us to mention that the opinions voiced on our program here today are for general information only, as Howie mentioned, and they're not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual to determine which investments may be appropriate for you. And we suggest that you consult your wealth manager, your financial advisor, your attorney, your accountant prior to investing. Howie Penteny is here from Penteny Capital Management in Portersville. He's a wealth manager, and as you mentioned, he's been in the business for quite a while. All of the major indices, there's a lot of them. The three big ones, the S&P, Standard & Poor's, which you just mentioned, the NASDAQ, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average, didn't they all end the year at record highs?
Basically.
Which is
close.
It's pretty incredible, really.
It is. You know, what caused all this? Well, I think a lot of different things. I think the policies and procedures put into effect by President Trump helped. A lot of people were working. You know, that certainly added to the enthusiasm and added to the success. But when President Obama was president, you know, the markets did real well. And he was arguably the most anti-business president going. So it's very difficult.
Yeah, the markets climbed steadily while the 8 years that Obama was in
exactly.
office.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's markets have a tendency, and people don't, generally speaking, people don't understand this. People will ask me, well, what about all these deficits? You know, or what about this and what about that? And basically they're looking for negatives, you know. Well, you know, it gives you an excuse not to invest. Well, I'm not going to invest because. Okay. And I always tell everybody, look, markets do what they do. Markets know, and they know usually in advance. So you could guess, if we were guessing, and that's what we do, that the market thought that this year, beginning in January of last year, that the market apparently thought that this year was going to be a good year, right? From an economic standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, it was. So the market anticipated that most of the year. And this was a good year for bonds also. Bonds did well. So you put those two things together and, you know, theoretically, if you had a diversified portfolio, you probably did pretty well. And, you know, what's pretty well, Howie? Well, pretty well is, let's assume that you were, there are various, you know, types of enthusiasm that you can talk about when you're an investor. For instance, you can be 100% in. In other words, you could own nothing but stocks. I have a handful of people that I know that are 100% in. I'm talking a handful. Okay. Then you could be 70, 30, 60, 40. You could be 60, 40, 70, 30, very common ways of investing. And what do we mean? Asset allocation. You could be 60% stocks and 40% bonds. 70% stocks and 30% bonds. Those are very popular ways of investing today. A lot of people look at those investment analyses and those asset allocations. That's the key. That's the word, asset allocations. Those are the words. And it, generally, if you do that, you know, you can help keep yourself out of trouble because you're not 100% in all the time, and you're not 100% out all the time. There's an old saying that I think I don't know where I read it, but it was 100 years ago, but the old saying said, if you have some stocks and you have some bonds and you have some cash, you can survive about anything. And I would think that's, you know, that continues to be fairly accurate. If you're diversified, you can probably do okay. You don't have to make 30%. See, that's the thing. My son, who likes to jerk me around all the time, you know, asked me that. He sent me a text the other day. How much of the 30 did you get? See, that's what he asked me. And I say it depends on how you were invested. If you were 50-50, for instance, 50% stocks, 50% bonds, and maybe you got 17 or 18%, that's a heck of a deal.
Well, it sure beats having your money in T-bills, treasury bonds. Well, they're still only paying, what, one point something percent?
Yeah, you didn't have to be. I mean, it's nice to be able to get 30. And I can name some managers that got 30, got above 30, outperformed the market, which also is unusual, by the way. But you don't have all. You don't have 100% of your money in there, so you didn't get all of it. Yeah. Okay,
we've had a run, really, for about 10 years, about the past decade. When the Great Recession was 1989, just as George Bush was leaving office, and since then, the story. I mean, there's been ups and downs, of course, but by and large, it's been up for a decade. I just saw a story. It's on the Associated Press wire a week or so ago. This was the headline, Wall Street Lowers Expectations. And then the subheadline, Spectacular Year for the Stock Market, Unlikely to Repeat, say analysts. I think they said the same thing a year ago, whenever we were heading into 2019. So
I'll tell you when they really said it, was 2000. After the market had somewhat recovered in 2009, early, it was the same people saying the same thing. We have to lower our expectations because, you know, we've really been hurt here. The markets have been hurt. Investor confidence has been hurt. We're just not going to have big returns over the coming years. Mm-hmm. So we were up 300%. You know, I mean, you just don't know. Nobody knows. I don't know. I never try to outguess anything. You know, if I advise investors, I say, look, Marty Zweig said it a long time ago, if the market goes up 20% and I can get, you know, 16 or 17%, I'm a pretty happy camper. I don't need to get it all. And with, to your point, with almost riskless investments not yielding very much, you know, you don't need to make 30%. You know, if you make 10, 15, I mean, you know, you're doing pretty well.
You're ahead of the game, yeah.
And so I think that you, I don't think you need to change. In other words, I'm not changing any asset allocation here. I just monitor that very carefully, and I rebalance things. I think that's important. Most people today probably are overloaded in stocks. If they looked at their portfolio, and let's say they started out 70-30, well, now they're probably 80-20 or so. So, you know, they're out of balance. And the mistake that I see people make occasionally is they don't rebalance. They're caught up in the enthusiasm. Well, I'm not going to, you know, this is what I hear. Things seem to be going very well, so I'm just going to leave it alone. I mean, I've heard people make that statement. And I always laugh. because that tells you that you probably ought to be doing something. You know, you need to be looking around a little
bit. How often do you recommend that people take a look at this? Every year?
Yeah, well, I only do it yearly, unless there's been a huge move. You know, if the market had been up 30% midway through this year, I think I would have been looking and changing. But if I get out of balance by, you know, 10 or 15%, I have a tendency to take a look at that. But it's more fun to do it at the end of the year, you know, because then you have a real number to look at. You know exactly where you are, and you just rebalance things and don't worry about it. You make the decisions, you know, you make the decisions based on the best available information you have at the moment. Mm-hmm. And that information can change. I mean, right now, to me, as I just look at it, there doesn't look like there's any reason for the stock market to go down. But guess what? It could go down 10 or 15% tomorrow. So it doesn't necessarily happen the way you think it's going to happen. I mean, to me, stock markets do well, and I think that it's another one of those things you and I have talked about. Stock markets generally do well with low interest rates, expanding corporate profits, companies making more money, and inflation under control. Well,
all of which
we have.
We have
all those things right now. I mean, have you looked at a big screen TV recently? You used to have to pay $4,000 or $5,000 to buy one. You don't have to do that anymore. Inflation appears to be under control at this moment. And corporate profits seem to be pretty good at this moment. And so as long as you have all those things, you usually have a decent stock market. However, the stock market anticipates things, as you and I were talking. So the stock market could start to go down tomorrow, and immediately you would get people saying, why is it going down? Why is it going down? Everything's still, why is it going down? Well, because it's anticipating the fact that it's going to go down and that the economic cycles are not going to be as good. So you never know. That's why you and I talk about it all the time. We don't know anything. We guess a lot, but we don't know anything because it's just too difficult to call.
I had to chuckle, and I don't remember exactly when it was. It was sometime shortly after Thanksgiving, maybe early December. There was one day that the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped about 360 points, I think, something like that. And one other day that week, it was down 100 and something. And the analysts were just all over the place that night on TV. Well, you know, oh, goodness, worries about the China trade agreement. And then, of course, it recovered within a space of another week or so and kept on going. And then it was, well, worries, fears are allayed about the China free trade. Everything hinged on the China free trade talks, which nobody knew how they were going.
Right.
One day it was good, next day it was bad, next day it was good.
Well, the market traded on that. To your point, the market traded on China for weeks. If it was good news overnight, the market went up. If it was bad news overnight, the market went down. But generally speaking, most of the gains and the losses in the markets happen before they get to us. The markets to the east are open. It's earlier in the day. Mm-hmm. They open, okay? So lots of times, things that happen in the United States don't mean anything. They've already happened. You know, if you see Hong Kong, Europe, if you see them doing very well, it's likely that it comes over here. See, so a lot of the returns are based on what already happened; it didn't get here yet. And you see, you know, there are a lot of theories about investing, which I just love. I just love theories. There's a theory out there called the smart money. What's the smart money do? This theory dictates that basically the public, or what the professional investors call the dummies, you know, the dummies are in there early in the morning, and they heard the bad economic news, so they're selling, okay? And in the afternoon, the market reverses and goes up because that's the smart money. The smart money's buying in the afternoon, say. And sometimes that's pretty cool to watch, actually. You know, it is funny to watch it because you get bad news and everybody's selling and blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, the big money managers are buying in the afternoon, you know, because they bought it at cheaper prices. So they let all the big dummies sell in the morning and they buy in the afternoon. Now, that's not obviously not always true. But it is fun to watch that kind of stuff. I mean, I love watching that stuff because sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So you can't always tell. But I've maintained, and I've been at this for a long time, if you stick to your guns, Chuck Knoll said one time, changing your game plan, something like this, if I can't quote him exactly, but he said, changing your game plan is a sign of panic. Panic is not in our game plan. So Chuck was saying, if you've got a plan, hang in there with it. Don't be playing around changing everything. And I've had to preach that, Dave, for years, where what you have to do, and this is funny, and nobody likes to hear this, what you have to do, in my view, to be a successful investor is figure out how much money you're willing to lose. And then build a portfolio that doesn't let you lose more than that much money. Now, that sounds kind of funny, but it isn't. If you think that the market, let's say that the market goes down 30% and you're 100% in, you're going to lose 30%. If you're 60% in and the market goes down 30%, you're going to lose 18%, give or take. It's not these. None of these numbers are in stone, as you know. So you can fix it so that you have some control. You cannot protect yourself 100% from loss. You just can't do it. When the market goes down, you're probably going to lose money. But you can get pretty close of protecting yourself and taking what you believe is a reasonable risk. Like people ask me what I do, and I say, the only thing I do is I just try to keep people from being silly. I don't want you to be silly. If you're, you know, if I'm advising you, I'm trying to keep you from being silly. If you have $20 million and you're only spending $100,000 a year on expenses, you don't have to take a lot of chances. You don't have to be aggressive, right?
And you've got enough.
You've got enough money, okay? There are people who have enough money. And I mean, I've run into them over the past 8 or 9 years, at least, because the markets have been so strong. I mean, I've actually had investors say to me, "Howie, I've got enough. Let's just try not to lose it." Okay, it's not a bad idea. What's wrong with that idea?
No.
It's not a bad idea. If you've got, I think that somebody said to me the other day that they had figured out it takes $2.4 million to be comfortable in retirement if you really want to live pretty well. And I would have a tendency to agree with that. If you take 4% of that, that's $100,000 a year. So if you can live on $100 and the markets continue to do decently, you ought to be able to get 4% out of $2.5 million to spend, to live on. Okay? That's $100. And if you have Social Security and, you know, anything else, why it's, you know, it's that's berries. That's more stuff, more money. So once you figure out what you can live on and, you know, then you figure out how much risk you can take. And you know, the sad thing is that over history, I've seen this. It's not, this doesn't happen all the time, Dave. But I've seen people who need to make a lot of money not be willing to invest for growth. You know, let's say that they don't make a lot of money and they've got a small retirement account. So they're not going to invest it for growth because they're afraid of losing it. Well, the reality is, who needs it? They do. They need the growth. And they should do what they feel strongly about. If you don't feel like taking risks, don't take it.
We're talking with Howie Penteny. He's a wealth manager with Penteny Capital Management in Portersville. We'll take a break, and we'll be back to continue our conversation, looking back at what was just a pretty doggone good year for investors in 2019. I can't believe 2019's gone already.
2020.
I haven't written any checks yet, so I haven't made that.
Do you still write checks?
I have a couple. A couple.
A couple?
Yeah. Most stuff is I do electronically now.
You know, I have to laugh at this. I said to myself some time ago, I'll never go checkless. I'll never not go to the bank and deposit money. Now I don't even get close to a bank, you know? I mean, you just take a picture of your check and deposit it in your checking account. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I said I would never do those things.
Well, people have no choice soon because more and more
right.
bank branches are closing. Right. Okay, we'll take a break, and back to talk more with Howie in just a couple of minutes. Be right back.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
In 2019, Tri-River celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tom Mazzanegro, known by many as Dr. Muzzy, and I'm an orthopedic hip and knee surgeon. Patients do best when they are engaged with the process, educated, and invested in their own well-being. At Tri-Rivers, the patient is at the center of everything we do.
To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866- 6-874-7483.
Howie Penteny visits with us today on the It's Your Turn program as we take a look back at the year 2019 in terms of how investments did. And stock market did pretty well. Let's talk a little bit about those final numbers, Howie, on the major indices that most people are familiar with.
Yeah, and I'll talk about it. Generally speaking, you can quote the numbers two ways, Dave. Total return, which includes dividends,
mm-hmm.
or just what the index did. And typically, I don't have a favorite, but I don't mind looking at the index without the dividends because everybody has expenses generally. So we could say, if we wanted to, that you could use the dividends to pay the expenses. So the numbers that I'm going to give you are just what the index did. The Dow was the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is 30 stocks, was up 22.3. Nothing shabby about that. You know, that's okay.
That's 22%, folks.
Yeah.
That's pretty good return.
The S&P was up just a shade under 29. So the big companies, the techs, you know, some of the big boys led the market higher with the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the 500 largest stocks as far as market capitalization, meaning the value of their stock. Okay? So the big companies weigh over the S&P. Now, you can buy equally weighted S&Ps if you want to. But that's how. But 28.9%. So if you owned the S&P index, 28.9. If you bought the index and kept the dividends and you didn't have any expenses, you made 31%. I mean, it's a big number. Again, nobody makes those, but it's fun to talk about 31%. Not many people make them anyway. The NASDAQ was up 35.2. You know, the Amazons and you know, the stocks that traded in the over-the-counter market, you know, they made big moves this year. They led the market forward.
And they're all, and most of them are NASDAQ.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, that number was big. The mid-caps did pretty well. I thought they would do better. They were up about 24, and the small caps, generally speaking, were not quite there. They're almost, but not quite there. Generally, what you have is small caps are ripping. You know, those are little companies that come to the forefront. They make a lot of money, and that index usually does pretty well. But this year, it was the big boy index, the Standard & Poor's 500, that did well. The I like to look, when I look at things, lots of times I look at the Wilshire 5000. The Wilshire 5000 is an index, generally speaking, of all the companies that are publicly traded. And it used to be 5,000, but it isn't anymore. It's like 3,500 or something.
But it changes. Still call it that.
Yeah. They still, the Wilshire 5,000 is like 3,500 or something. But I like to watch it because what that does is that tells you how everything did because it's small cap and mid cap and large cap. Mm-hmm. So the total stock market index, not necessarily the Wilshire, because I didn't look at the Wilshire this morning, but the S&P, the Dow Jones total stock market index was up 28.5. Boys and girls, that's not bad. I mean, if you owned a diversified portfolio of the Dow Jones indexes, theoretically, you could have made 28. That's not bad.
Why do people still look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average as such a benchmark, such a bell cow? I mean, it's only, 30 stocks? Was it 30 or 32? I forget what the exact number.
30, yeah.
But
I mean, because that's what they're used to, Dave. I mean,
they hear that.
They've heard it forever.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that.
But it's only 30 companies.
I understand. People used to look at that, and they still look at it. The people, you know, particularly older people, more mature people, look at that because that's the index that's been quoted forever. Okay. But I noticed that some of the larger news media, I'm talking in particular radio and television, mm-hmm. have begun to quote what the S&P index is up or down for the day.
Yeah.
When they sign off of there, they'll say, you know, on Wall Street, the S&P is up 4 points. So they've moved out a little bit. Even the news media has moved out a little bit and started picking up the fact that the Dow is not necessarily where it's at all the time. And so that's my view is that's a good thing. So, but I think too much is made of comparing things. You know, everything is relative anymore. Relative to the S&P, people will say, relative to the S&P, my account was only up 20%. Well, boys and girls, 20% is okay. You know, it wasn't 28.5, it wasn't 29, granted, but 20 is okay. And so those are kind of the real numbers, which you can throw all that in the trash right now because it's a new year.
I want to talk a little bit about, and this is from a common sense standpoint.
We don't do that here.
Well, it doesn't make sense to me, but I don't know anything. I want to talk about Boeing. You know, the aircraft manufacturer. They do other things too. They're making a rocket now that will take Americans
aerospace
to the space station.
Aerospace.
Yeah, but mainly they're known for building passenger aircraft, and they had this 737 MAX disaster with. Last year, two huge crashes, and they grounded the plane and so on and so forth. And, you know, you see these pictures on TV of hundreds of these 737 MAXs parked wing-to-wing at these airports because they're grounded all over the world. It's not just in the U.S. They're grounded all over the world. And in my mind, I say, man, that must be killing this company. You know, and yet their stocks...
It's done okay, relatively speaking.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great, but it hasn't gone through the bottom either.
Yeah, it hadn't gone to zero. So, you know, why is that? Well, the reality is that if you have been a Boeing shareholder for a number of years, you've probably made a lot of money. Even now, with the stock having a downward trend, you're still probably pretty good. Pretty good shape. And that's the thing, I think, with really good companies. If you have a really good company and something bad happens, short term, it could be bad. You know, I mean, it's not good. And I think that this is going to be really interesting to watch this. I have no clue what's going to happen to Boeing here. You know, I would guess that they survive and, you know, they're not going to go out of business, but I, you know, what do I know? I don't know anything. But they're one of America's great companies. And it wouldn't surprise me if they make it through this okay. I don't know that they're going to, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they make it through this okay. But remember Tylenol and Johnson & Johnson? I mean, you know, just remember all that stuff that happened, that has happened to great companies. Great companies with great leadership have a tendency to make out okay. Now, Boeing's replaced some people.
Well, they're top. Yeah. Their top CEO got canned a week or so ago.
Yeah. And, you know, those people always get axed. It may or may not have been his issue. But, you know, those things always happen. I mean, I love baseball. Baseball is my favorite sport. Over the years, I have watched so many great managers get canned because the baseball players were bad. You know what I'm saying?
That's a good analogy, yeah.
You know, the players weren't playing well enough to win, so they fired the manager. Well, wait a minute. Where did, you know, it's probable that the manager had very little to do with accumulating all those baseball players, right? The general manager, somebody probably drafted him. And, you know, I always look at the Pirates as my example, you know. You know, the Pirates apparently, from I mean, I'm just an amateur, but it looks to me like, you know, the Pirates are not willing to spend money, and as soon as somebody starts making a lot of money, they get rid of them. Now, that's just my personal opinion. And we are a small market here, but there's a lot of small markets that have pretty good baseball teams. So you have to take a look at that about companies. You know, if you look at the companies out there, And again, this is not a stock recommend. I am not recommending that you buy any of these stocks. But if you take a look at the really good companies out there, they've all had one or two things in common. They have good management. That's number one. I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, you got to have good management. And then you have good products. And you treat people fairly, okay? If you have those things, if you take a look at the names, you just go in the Wall Street Journal, take a look at the names, and you take a look at the people that you've recognized, if you're old like you and I are, if you look at people, companies that have been in business for 40 years, for instance, or 50 years, what do they have in common? They make good products, they have good management, and they treat people right. And they're going to be around. Yeah, I was interviewed for the newspaper the other day, and one of the questions asked was, "Howie, how do you get a lot of money?" And I said, "That's the easiest question I've ever heard in my life to answer. How do you get a lot of money? It's easy. Historically, it's been easy. You work hard, you save your money, and you invest." Right?
Absolutely.
That's been, I mean, it doesn't get any easier than that. Historically, that has worked. Work hard, save your money, and invest. The investors I know, an overwhelming majority of them fit that particular description. They worked hard, they saved their money, and they invested. And they didn't do it tomorrow afternoon. They did it over a long period of time. It takes time, if you're going to do it legally, it takes time to do that and to make a lot of money. But I'm just not personally familiar with anybody who has worked hard, saved their money, and invested who don't have a lot of money.
Is this a time of year when wealth managers are particularly busy? Are there people who have been on the sidelines and they're looking at these incredible numbers, Dow Jones Industrial Average, S&P, NASDAQ, all ending the year at record highs, and they're thinking, gosh, I better get into this, you know.
Generally,
the ship is sailing without me here.
Yeah, generally, you're talking about individual investors, okay? And that's a general statement. But if you look at mutual funds and the people who manage mutual funds, they're pretty much in. Mm-hmm. You know, they're invested. And so they, most of them, there are some who have been sitting on cash. There's a lot of money out there, Dave. And that's another reason this market may continue to go. It may not, but it may continue to go because, man, there's a bunch of money out there.
So when you say that, you mean there are people who have cash on hand that they could, if they choose, invest.
There's a bunch of money out there. Hmm. So this market could continue to go. If nothing goes wrong and people begin to commit that money, this market could go higher. It could. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe nobody commits the money. Maybe more people have been taking money out of this market, Dave, than they have been putting it in. Are you ready for that? That's incredible. When I back over my career, one of the things that remained constant over most of my career was I get the phone call, "Hey, Howie, I just found another $50,000. And the market's doing pretty well, so I think we ought to put it in the market." And, of course, my question is, where were you 18 months ago, see, instead of waiting till the market goes up? So sometimes people sit on money, and then they commit it later, and that also helps the market to go up, you know, because they're committing it late. But I'm telling you right now, all you got to do is look at the cash out there, and it's everywhere. And there's a lot of it out there in banks in particular. And so, theoretically, you know, that money could be committed. Maybe nobody commits it. Maybe everybody's afraid. The money has been moving out of the stock market in droves. My point is that when I, a long time ago in my career, people became more enthusiastic as the market went higher. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, everybody gets... they're happy camp. Man, this market's going up. It's never going to stop. And I'm going to get me some of that. I mean, I don't know how many times in my career I heard that. And, of course, what typically happened? Then the market sold down. You know, everybody waited. And so now they're going to put their money in, and they're all happy, and then the markets go down. So
a lot of that depends on when you start. And you can't emphasize enough that you need to start early. I mean, your philosophy, if you're in your 20s or early 30s, is a lot different than it is if you're nearing retirement age.
Yeah, and you have to do it consistently. I mean, I think the best way to save money is to save it every month if you can. You know, if you can make a contribution to your 401k or your IRA or whatever it is, or however you save money, your regular brokerage account, do it every month. And be consistent. And, you know, I mean, I cannot tell you how many times I've heard people say, well, you know, I don't have my IRA anymore because the market started going down, so I sold everything. Now, how sad is that? See, because they never get back in then. And I know of people who did that 8 or 9 years ago. They mm-hmm. sold everything, and they've never gotten back in. And it's sad. So you do have to have courage. You and I have talked about this. It takes courage to be an investor. It takes courage. Man, if you have $50,000 and it goes down in value to $35,000, there is nothing happy about that. People watch that. And you don't like to see your money go flying out the door. I get that, see. The problem is that historically, you had to let that happen. You couldn't sell. If you sold, then you don't get back in, and then the market goes back up again. So it's very difficult to not be afraid. Fear is a horrible thing, you know.
We'll take a break, come back and talk more with Howie Pentany visiting with us here in the studio on It's Your Turn this Thursday. We will be right back.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, the only executive-level fitness center in Butler, providing a clean, unintimidating environment with modern equipment and a full-time staff to assist you. A proud partner of the Silver Sneakers and Prime Networks, Applewood offers classes like Silver Sneakers, Pyo, and high-intensity interval training. Open daily, the fitness center has flexible membership options and discounts for students, military, and paid EMS employees. See more at applewoodchiro.com. Must have valid student or military ID or proof of EMS employment for discount.
Escape the hustle and bustle and enjoy breakfast, lunch, or dinner at Michael's Restaurant. Meet at Michael's for a get-together with family and friends or on your way to or from the light show. And don't forget, every Friday night is prime rib night. Need a quick gift? Michael's Restaurant gift cards also make great stocking stuffers.
Talk a little bit about commodities. How about gold? Some people invest in, a lot of people invest in gold. There was a time not too long ago, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, where every time you turned on your TV, Howie, there were commercials for people wanting to buy your old jewelry. Remember that?
Yep.
Your old watches, yep. Your necklaces, your Aunt Edna's bracelets. Bring them in, and we'll buy them. That was when gold was at a record high. You don't hear too many of those commercials anymore.
Well, the funny thing about that is, and I laugh about this all the time, because I have a friend and a client who's in the jewelry business, okay, in the gold business. And man, I remember back then when people were taking gold in, every gold piece of gold they could find, they were taking it in to sell. And guess what? They were right.
Yes.
The speculators had driven the price up back in 2011, the latter half, I think, of 2011. And to your point, everybody was advertising, bring your gold in, and blah, 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 blah. Well, I hope you did, because you sold it and it hadn't been back. See?
Yeah, you have a chart there.
Yeah, 2011 was significantly higher. See? So it has gone up about 10% a year on average for the past 3 or 4 years. So gold's kind of interesting. I mean, it has been a hedge if the markets have been bad. It has been a hedge because people will rush out and buy gold. It's kind of like rushing out and buying the dollar. You know, if things are bad, historically, people have rushed out and bought dollars as opposed to other forms of currency because it's stable and safe, and, you know, that's what they think. Mm-hmm. And so they go out and buy gold. So if you bought gold in 2011, you're down 30% or something, you know. So I don't know how smart you were, but you should have been selling your gold and buying the stock market. But see, nobody knows, right? Nobody knew that. And I get this question. What do you think of gold? I think it's pretty. My wife loves it.
Well, it's probably, and I'm a rank amateur here, but it's probably the risk thing, right? I mean, there are some people who think that, you know, if we have a world war,
Armageddon.
I've got gold.
Armageddon. You know? Yeah. If Armageddon occurs, gold's going to be okay. And that's probably true. I don't recommend, people talk to me about it all the time, and I always say, if you want to buy a wasting asset, in other words, the asset really probably doesn't pay you anything. There are some companies, gold mining companies and so on, that pay dividends, blah, 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 blah. But if you're buying bullion or an ETF or something like that, you may not be making any money. So if you don't mind that, and you're buying it as an investment or as a hedge against loss, then there's nothing wrong with owning some gold. I am not in favor of owning more than 5%, but that's my opinion. You know, I don't know anything. 5% makes me comfortable. See, put 5% of your money in gold if you want to. And if you want to own it, own some, that's fine. That's fine. It's a good hedge, you know, but it's a wasting asset to some degree. You know, if you buy gold bullion, for instance, you have to have it assayed to sell it again. You know, so if you take possession of it, then you take it out and you want to sell it, you got to have it assayed, which costs you more money.
What about coins like Krugerrands?
No, those are okay. You know,
where do you keep them? A safe deposit box in a bank or what?
Well, it depends on the person. In a bag. I know people keep them in a bag.
Under the mattress.
Under the mattress. It depends on the, you know, who you are. But
I just saw a story on the wire, it was last week, I think, about fewer and fewer people have safe deposit boxes now. It used to be everybody had one. You know, when you became an adult or you got married or whatever, you got a safe deposit box at the local bank. And banks are trying to ditch the things. They don't want to bother with them anymore.
Well, number one, nothing's insured. So if you have some things in your safety deposit box and the bank gets broken into some night and they break into the safety deposit boxes, guess what? Number one, it's likely you don't have any proof what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be people stored a lot of cash and bearer bonds in safety deposit box. I have no idea what they do now.
But it's not FDIC insured.
No. So you're not, you know, so you're in trouble. If the safety deposit box gets broken into and you lose whatever's in there, you've lost it. Now, a lot of this stuff can be replaced. Like if you keep, titles to your car in there, something like that. You know, you can replace that. So it's not a big deal. But you are absolutely right. You know, whenever you walk into the bank and you want to go into your safety deposit box, in many instances, the bank employees kind of frown at you because they got to go take time to go open the key and let you in and make you sign your name and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure of that as far as every banking institution having that feeling, but a lot of them do that. They could probably do without them.
And many new bank branches don't even have them anymore.
Right.
Hey, we need to take a final break here, so let's do that, and we'll be back and wrap up our conversation with Howie Penthony here on It's Your Turn on WISR Thursday edition, back after these words.
You've been so busy getting ready for the holidays that you totally forgot to get your vehicle ready for the winter. No worries. West End Tire and Service kept their snow tire inventory up, but don't wait too long as they're harder to come by later in the season. West End Tire and Service prides itself on offering the same great service, installation, and staff as Siemens provided for years. Their trained technicians will check your air pressure and do tire evaluations for free. Anytime. Stop in and see what's new and be sure to visit them on Facebook. West End Tire Service today, West Cunningham Street next to Battery Warehouse Plus Butler.
The winter weather is quickly approaching. That means stopping at Osterling's Lawn and Garden should be at the top of your to-do list. Stock up on rock salt, snow shovels, and PetSafe snow melter to ensure that you are ready for those freezing cold weeks. Osterling's even has great pet items like grain-free dog biscuits, PetSafe dog harnesses and collars, indoor pet gates, and 40-pound bags of dog food. For everything you'll need this winter, find it at Osterling's Lawn and Garden.
ArmCo Credit Union has one sweetheart of a loan rate waiting for you. Hi, I'm Kurt Heekins, loan manager at ArmCo Credit Union. And whether you're thinking of buying a vehicle or refinancing a loan from another financial institution, now is the time to take advantage of our low, low rates. Now through February the 29th, you can get a 60-month auto loan for as low as 2.25 annual percentage rate. Check out armcocu.com for other rates and terms. Apply for a loan online or visit us in person.
ArmCo Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
Good Samaritan Hospice offers an educational resource to support you who care for your frail or ill loved ones. SeriousIllness.org/Pittsburgh. As experts in serious illness, we have worked with families providing pain and symptom management, emotional and spiritual support, and so much more. Choose Good Samaritan Hospice, 1-800-720-2557.
Now, we have Anthony visiting with us today as we take a look at how investors did in the past year, the recently completed year of 2019. What about foreign stock markets? We've concentrated on the U.S. markets.
They did okay, Dave, but they're still not where you and I would like to see them. It used to be easy in my career a long time ago. It used to be easy to beat the American stock market. All you had to do was buy some foreign stocks. And if you had a portfolio of domestic and foreign stocks, that portfolio, generally speaking, outperformed domestic stocks. So if you went outside the United States and bought some companies and then put them in with your American stocks that you own, generally speaking, that performance typically always outperformed the Americas. That doesn't happen anymore. It hasn't happened anymore. It might happen in the future. A lot of people think that foreign stocks are cheap, but they're still, like, I look at some very good managers who manage foreign investments, and they were up 20 or 21%, and our market was up 29%. So, you know, the foreign stocks have not done well. There are still people who think you have to keep a position because when those markets turn, you want to be there, okay? So there are people who believe that.
Who are the big ones that we watch? Japan, Germany?
Yeah, exactly. Hong Kong.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you look at the one, and you can peek around and look at India and all those, but those are more emerging markets, see. You want to look at the big markets, see how they're doing. And the mid-cap stocks in the United States are something that I like. My guess is, you know, the mid-cap, I'm not a small-cap guy, I like mid-caps. And I noticed that the mid-caps performed in line with the S&P in many instances. So the medium-sized companies are doing quite well. And just think about that. Why is that? Well, because that's because the economy's good. And those medium-sized companies are, you know, to some degree doing well. And if those medium-sized companies do well, then their stocks will do well. So no wonder some of those mid-cap stocks have been doing well. And as we look at commodities, I like to look at commodities because I like to guess when to buy my coffee. When should I buy my coffee? You know,
which is expensive these days, by the way.
Well, yeah, but it depends. Sometimes you get a bargain, you know. But let me run down a few of these. And these numbers are not perfect, ladies and gentlemen. I could be off a percent or so because these are futures and they're not absolute. So forgive me if I'm off a little bit. But I'll tell you what some of the commodities were. How did they perform last year? And we'll talk about the ones that went up first. Gasoline up 24%. Crude oil up 22%. Rice up 21%. Soybean oil up 18%. Gold up 16%. Silver up 11.8%. Coffee up 11.6%. Oats up 8%, milk up 7%, hogs up 6%, cattle up 6%. What that tells me right there is that we had a pretty good year for consumers. You know, we people who eat things, it wasn't a bad year to buy your oats and your hogs and your beef. You know, things did not go completely through the roof. Now, on the downside, you had sugar just barely down a couple of percent. So that's even better, see. My point is that on the upside, you know, we didn't go crazy on the upside, so it wasn't too bad. And on the downside, we got some advantages like corn, down 3 or 4%. Cotton, down 5%. Canola oil, down 6%. Wheat, down 10%. And orange juice, down 25%.
Wow.
Natural gas, down 27%. So from a consumer standpoint, you may not have seen price matches exactly what I'm telling you about. You may not have seen orange juice down 25% in price, but the flow is down. So it's not been a, it wasn't a bad year for consumers. The stock market, for a lot of people, is a pretty good year.
We don't know what 2020 will hold, but keeping our fingers crossed. Yeah, if we even came close to this past year, we'd be in good shape. And once again, folks, the opinions voiced on our program today, general information only. They're not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Check with your own wealth manager, financial person or attorney for that. Howie Pentany is with Pentany Capital Management in Portersville. You still have the same phone number, 724-368-4224?
That's correct.
Howie, good to see you today.
Thanks, David.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be all right.
I hope so.
We'll see.
Okay. Good to have
you. Well, we're going to be all right one way or the other because we don't have any control.
That wraps up our It's Your Turn program for a Thursday. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow, 12:30.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.